Finally, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. According to a recent report, New Hampshire as a whole could do a lot better when it comes to energy efficiency. In fact, it says collectively we could squeeze out 10 times more efficiency from our homes and businesses and saving, as a state, almost $200 million a year. The study comes from the Office of Energy and Planning. It's called Increasing Energy Efficiency in New Hampshire, Realizing Our Potential, which the authors say we're not doing now. They say that's because there's no overarching statewide commitment to efficiency expressed through policy or funding. And even where the state does have some clout, with regulated utilities, for example, the report says it doesn't often take full advantage of that power. But while it's easy to critique what could be done better at the macro state level, large-scale change could be difficult. Energy use is based on thousands of micro-level decisions, choices made by the biggest businesses to the smallest homeowners, from how high to turn the thermostat to how much to spend on insulation. Today in The Exchange, does New Hampshire have a deficiency when it comes to energy efficiency? Let's get you into our conversation. What do you think would help reduce New Hampshire's overall energy use? Should that even be a state goal right now, given the many other priorities, from roads to mental health? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook. It's NHPR Exchange. All one word. Our guests are Meredith Hatfield, director of the state's Office of Energy and Planning, which, as I said, put out that report. You can find that on our Facebook page as well, if you'd like. Meredith, welcome back. It's nice to see you.
Good morning.
Also with us, Mike Licata, vice president of public policy for the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. And Mike, good to see you too. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Laura Richardson, executive director of the Jordan Institute, which advocates for improved energy efficiency in commercial buildings. And Laura, it's nice to meet you. You're new at the Jordan Institute, and welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Meredith, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody. The report, as I said, says New Hampshire could be 10 times more efficient. And I looked at that a couple times yesterday. Not 10% more, but 10 times more. How realistic is that, Meredith?
It's actually very realistic, Laura. And this is the third report that the state has done since 2008 that really has shown that we have a lot more efficiency that we could be doing that is cost effective. And what that means is when we say cost effective is that it costs less than buying energy itself. So instead of buying a gallon of oil or you know, a kilowatt hour of electricity or a therm of gas, we can actually buy efficiency, think of it as a fuel, and do that much cheaper than supply. Efficiency costs usually less than 3 cents a kilowatt hour. And when you buy a kilowatt hour from your electric utility, we're talking 15 to 17 cents. So this study really was to have us step back and say, okay, we've studied this a few times. We know we could be doing more. We know all the states around us are doing more. What are the very specific things that New Hampshire could consider doing to really lower our bills and take advantage of efficiency?
Well, and you touched on something that I wanted to ask you about, Meredith, and hear from everybody again. This idea that, conservation, efficiency should be considered an alternative energy, just like wind or hydro or solar. But most of the conversations that we hear in New Hampshire about greener energy or improving energy have to do with wind, hydro, solar, tidal. How come we don't talk about energy efficiency as another alternative?
You know, I think it's a pretty recent recognition nationally and also at the regional level. Our electric grid operator now considers efficiency as an energy resource.
Just like a power plant.
That's right. And increasingly, people are realizing that efficiency, because it is the cheapest and the cleanest source, and really, if you think about it as a source, it's our main local source, that it really needs to be thought of as our first resource, that we should really be saying to ourselves, okay, before we figure out what the rest of our supply looks like, we should say how much efficiency should we do? And if you think about it, I mean, you know, it's kind of a natural thing for us New Hampshire people, you know, who think of ourselves as frugal Yankees. I mean, we, you know, a lot of us try to do it already, but we really need to do more.
Okay, so Mike Licata, 10 times more. Again, no one's perfect. Certainly New Hampshire could do better, but 10 times more efficiency we could squeeze out of the state. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a good study, and appreciate the work that Meredith's office put into it along with the contractors who conducted the study. We had some conversations at the Business and Industry Association with them along the way, and were able to provide some input. And I think there's no question that there are opportunities available out there today for, you know, the so-called low-hanging fruit that's still out there. But ultimately, when you look at the study, you know, it calls for some significant costs associated with getting at this energy efficiency. And that's really, you know, where we have our concerns with the implementation of an energy efficiency resource standard. This, as Meredith said, sort of this goal and sort of purchasing energy efficiency as a commodity. You know, it calls for a significant increase in state spending, and whether or not you know, businesses and residents are able to afford that increase in spending to get at this energy efficiency, whether that money, once it's accumulated by the state, is spent on the energy efficiency is an issue. So certainly looking at the study, I think, as I said, there's some really good recommendations in there, some really well thought out ideas. But, you know, what looks good on a piece of paper might not always look good in practice. And I think we have to really, you know, walk slowly when we're looking at this issue, really make sure that we're getting all of our ducks in a row. As I said, there are lots of opportunities out there for energy efficiency, but, you know, cost effectiveness as well can be a little bit in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the low-hanging fruit in just a minute, Mike. But so you said, you know, great, everyone obviously supports energy efficiency, but you're a little worried about significant costs. Does that mean to the individual, to the state, to everybody? What kind of costs?
Well, certainly representing the Business and Industry Association, I'm concerned about costs to our industrial and commercial businesses around the state. But certainly residential consumers as well. We have extraordinarily high energy prices here in New Hampshire. You know, we're certainly in the top 10, probably close to top 5. It's a huge issue, and it affects the business community very much so. It's a competitiveness issue. We are our businesses are competing for jobs. And competing with facilities all around the world and all around the country. So when a company that might have a facility here in New Hampshire also internally has a facility in, say, Texas, you know, they're competing with that facility. And it's difficult, you know, when you already have sort of the cards stacked against them with electricity rates being so high here in New Hampshire compared to neighboring states, compared to other states. So it's a really big challenge. And obviously, residential folks have many advocates for them. And it's a huge challenge for them as well.
I want to get you into this too, Laura, but ask you the same question in a little bit of a different way when we talk about how much energy efficiency New Hampshire could squeeze out overall as a state. Where would you get your most bang for the buck, Laura, toward getting that, toward that goal, getting 10 times more efficiency than we do now?
It's a great question, Laura. You know, I think we need to sort of take a step back and think about the money that we can put into these programs relative to the bigger pie of money that we're spending on energy right now, which is really an enormous amount of money. So energy efficiency programs, on paper, it looks like a lot of money because, you know, there are a lot of zeros or a lot of commas involved in that. But there are more zeros and more commas in the number of the amount of money that we're spending on energy. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
Money going out the window is heat escapes.
And it happens every single year. And so if you make an energy efficiency upgrade to a building, whether homeowner building or a commercial building, you're saving that money again and again. It's compounding savings. And that's how you start to position yourself to compete. I think Mike is absolutely right that, you know, businesses, especially the large industrial companies, are going to look at the big picture, and they're going to look at New Hampshire, and they're going to say, you know, the state really hasn't put a comprehensive policy in place that covers all of these issues, and that policy work is a lead by example. It's credibility building. It's saying this is important to us. And then the utilities get in line. Then the businesses get in line. Everybody starts to say, okay, it's time to really address this. The work that we do at the Jordan Institute and our for-profit subsidiary, Resilient Buildings Group, we do work in commercial buildings, and we see energy savings of 50% of the savings of the actual energy and cost savings up to 70 and 80%. That's really remarkable. So the fact that we can increase the savings by 10% as or a 10x improvement, it's very doable. Very, very doable.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about. I want to invite our listeners to join us, too, with their questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. All of you, let's go to our listeners now. And Penty's calling from Pembroke. Hi, Penty. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I think this is a very important area. The point I'd like to focus on is what's come to be called second law efficiency. It's basically looking at the conversion efficiencies of different systems. When we talk about a gas heater at 90% efficiency used to heat a space, it really isn't the correct definition for it. If you change the question and say, here's some gas, can you heat a house with it? There are many more efficient ways to use that gas to heat the house. Waste heat from a power plant, for example, is one. Electrically and gas-fired heat pumps are another that can produce much more heat from the same amount of gas. The potential there is very, very large, where we could be looking at theoretically 25 times as much heat coming into a house as contained in the fuel itself.
Wow. Penty, thanks for the call. Meredith Hatfield, go ahead.
Hi, Penty. I do think Penty's raising a really important issue that we need to incorporate into our efficiency thinking, and that would be including what we call combined heat and power. So what Penty's referring to is a lot of times we produce electricity by burning something, and then we let the waste heat escape. And there are technologies very widely available now that allow you to capture that waste heat and allow you to use a fuel much more efficiently.
Wow. All right. Well, maybe after a break and later on in the program, we can talk a little bit more about that because it sounds like it has some potential. Penty, thank you for joining us. The number again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back in a minute.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. You're invited to join the Walter Peterson Legacy Society by including NHPR in your estate plan. When you do, you'll help ensure our on-air service to the New Hampshire community for years to come. For more information about the Walter Peterson Legacy Society and our many planned giving options, visit nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, mostly sunny for most of this day today. Partly sunny north of the mountains. Today's highs around 14 in northern Coos County, around 20 in central parts of the state, upper 20s along the Massachusetts border. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Palace Theater in Manchester, where the arts come alive, presenting the Broadway musical comedy Xanadu, January 10th through the 25th. Tickets at palacetheater.org. And from Dr. Brian Herdifer of Manchester, providing general and cosmetic dentistry to New Hampshire families and dentist to the Boston Bruins. Details at bruinsdentists.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, energy efficiency in New Hampshire. As some focus on finding new sources of alternative energy, others are saying we should just use less, that could be the best form of alternative energy. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. All one word. By the way, on our Facebook page, you can find a link to some of the reports and research that we'll be talking about today. 1-800-892-6477, again, is the number. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, just before the break, I was talking with Laura Richardson at the Jordan Institute about where you get the most bang for your buck. I'd like to hear from you too, Mike Licata, on this. Is it leaky buildings? Is it, offices and stores blasting the air conditioning in the summertime? Is it people leaving lights on? plugging in their devices more than they need to be. Where do you get the most bang for the buck? Where's that low-hanging fruit that you mentioned earlier?
I think it's a little bit of all of the above, but certainly lighting, I think, is usually the first box that people check off.
Really?
Certainly in the residential field, it's easy enough to change out a light bulb, commercial, industrial as well. You know, it's easy to do. It's low cost, and it tends to have a pretty good bang for the buck. Thermal tends to be a little bit harder to crack. It tends to be a bit more expensive to deal with, you know, sort of the building envelope. Certainly in the industrial sector, you know, upgrades to industrial process, the motors, the engines, that tends to be a bit more expensive, but you get a lot of bang for the buck out of that. And certainly it's nice to do that as, you know, you're upgrading your industrial process already to try and build in that energy efficiency when you're doing that process. So there are a lot of different levers you can pull. I think lighting's probably, you know, the lowest of the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, what about that, Meredith?
I agree with Mike, and I think one of the things that our utilities and organizations like Laura's have been trying to really focus on is to not go to a building and just pick off the most cost-effective thing.
Now, why not?
Well, because if you think about it as a package, I mean, think about your own home, you can combine things that are very cost-effective with things that are a little more expensive, a little harder to do, and it makes the overall package easier to pay for. Basically, it makes your whole overall payback time much shorter. And so the utilities have really been trying to take a whole building or a whole house approach. And they've also been trying to combine that with financing options, because for most of us, the upfront cost to make those changes in our homes or our businesses is really the challenge for us. So we've been working with the utilities to try to break down those barriers for people. So go into their building and say, here are all the things that we recommend that you do. Here's what we could help you finance. And then maybe here are some projects that you could do out in future years when
Wow.
you're ready.
But that's kind of not everybody's nature, Meredith, you know, to take on everything all at once. I mean, most of us say, especially if we're debt averse, okay, I can fix the door this year, I can fix the windows
Right.
the year after, and I can get a new heater the year after.
Well, absolutely. And we need to be sensitive to people's ability to take on these projects. But at least if you know when you're doing the door and you're doing the lighting that, you know, your longer term needs in your building, you know, include other things, you can be mindful as you're making other changes to your building that, oh, you know, in 10 years, I want to get a new heating system. In 5 years, I want to really invest in insulation. But it's much more you just end up with a better product if you're thinking about the whole package right from the beginning.
All right. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. With us now on the phone, speaking of homes and homeowners, is Paul Morin. He's president of Tarka Homes. He's actively involved in the Home Builders and Remodelers Association of New Hampshire. Paul regularly testifies before the legislature on issues relating to the industry. And Paul Morin, welcome back. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Well, we've been looking at this energy efficiency study, and I want to ask you a couple broad questions and then some specifics, Paul. First of all, what do you make about the hope that this report lays out that New Hampshire could squeeze 10 times more efficiency out of its sectors than it does right now?
10 times more does seem like an awfully big goal, and I'm not sure, you know, if how they're measuring such a thing. What I know about new construction is that we are building right now already the most energy efficient homes that we've ever built, and I happen to think that New Hampshire, because of our climate, because of the building codes that we have to adhere to, which are among the highest in the country, the 2009 Energy Code, are already performing extremely well. So I'm not sure where there's always additional efficiencies that can be had. 10 times what? I'm not sure about that.
How have the standards changed, Paul, in the many years that you've been in the home building business?
There's innovation that comes from product manufacturers. There are codes and compliance requirements that continue to evolve, and you know, the graph is going up on all of these things. And understanding of how buildings work as a system by the people who put them together. These things are all combining so that just natural forces are making the buildings more and more energy efficient, even if you let alone government policies and incentives that are meant to boost that along.
So it's partly innovations in the building sector itself. Here, look at these better windows, look at these better heaters. How much is government policy playing a role there, Paul?
In my opinion, very, very little. And I know that the scorecard that came out that puts New Hampshire somewhere in the middle nationally and relatively low in New England is really all about the policies that are in place, the reports and what are the programs. That doesn't change most behavior. It doesn't change the behavior of the clients who are buying my homes. When I sit down with them and talk to them about where they're investing their money and a more energy efficient system and the return on investment, that changes behavior, and it's not because there's a policy out there saying, if you do this, I'll rebate you $500. There's, first of all, not enough money to get to everybody who's considering a purchase. It really is about people making wise decisions that make economic sense for themselves. That's where most people are making the energy-efficient decisions and going with something that performs better.
Over the long term, they're looking at it that way. The rebates and incentives and tax credits and so forth don't make that much of a difference, you're saying, Paul?
No, not in my experience and the other folks that I talk to. There's just not a lot of dollars available, really, for the number of homes that get built. And I just firmly believe that people are making smart, energy-efficient decisions because it makes sense for them. But the other factor they have to consider is not just return on investment. There's the initial affordability. And any time you raise a standard to the point where, all right, the house is so tight, now we have to bring in mechanical ventilation, so there's another $2,500. Now we have to change how we do the windows and all of these different things. You lose people that can afford to otherwise get into the market and buy a new home. And so they're thinking long term, but they're also thinking, what's it going to cost for me to get into this place initially?
One more question for you, Paul, if I could. What about older housing stock? As you well know, most homes in New Hampshire are far from brand new.
Well, thank you. My own home is 200 years old and has a couple of leaks here and there. And I'm glad you brought it up because the new housing stock is such a small percentage of the overall housing stock in New Hampshire, and it's also the what's performing the very best. And so if we're concentrating on how can we build better homes, we're really addressing a very tiny portion of the problem. And how do you get to the existing housing stock? In commercial, we're always talking about how we retrofit for businesses to run more efficiently, but you can't go to someone's home and tell them they have to do this or that. I think this, again, has to be market-driven. People have to be shown, as some of your guests have mentioned this morning, how it is a good investment in the long term and encourage them to make these investments. But it has to be a market-based thing.
All right, Paul. Good to talk to you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Paul Morin, president of Tarka Homes, actively involved with the Home Builders and Remodelers Association of New Hampshire. The number for you to join our conversation on energy efficiency here in the Granite State, both homes and commercial buildings, is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange. You can also find some of the reports that we're talking about on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And all of you, before we go back to our listeners, a couple points that Paul made up that I thought were real interesting. And Laura, to you first. He says, look, the rebates, the incentives, the tax credits don't matter that much. It's really just market-driven, people making individual decisions about what's best for them and their budgets.
True to a point. I think the incentives provide a level of credibility that's really important in the marketplace, really encourage the building professionals to look into the innovative products that are available. Sometimes there's a learning curve involved in that. And frankly, an incentive helps push and get over that learning curve. We've seen this again and again with relatively new buildings that just do not meet performance expectations. It's really alarming to us that, energy efficiency is invisible. And so when we go into a relatively new building with an infrared camera and we look at the walls and we see that the insulation is not where it's supposed to be, you can see it with the camera. that is poor performance, and that happens again and again in buildings, both residential and commercial. As far as the incentives go, there's not that much money, and there never will be enough money to do all of this appropriately. I think what we're really excited about at the Jordan Institute is the interest by the private market, third-party lenders getting involved in this, realizing that there is a really good return on investment for this work, and that if you can package a project in such a way that it's comprehensive, that it's vetted, it's done properly, you have an energy auditor in there that's really making the appropriate recommendations, and the project follows that that guidance in that audit, you wind up with an exceptional building that it really is not that much more expensive upfront, and ultimately has much lower operational costs.
And this is a new building you're talking about,
or an
old building?
These are new buildings, and these are retrofit buildings. We're doing a lot of work in historic buildings that have, you know, a lot of complicating factors. If you just go in and deal with the low-hanging fruit on those buildings, you're going to miss some tremendous opportunities to save. You know, maybe you'll save 15%. That's great. But if you can save 50% on your energy bill, that's significant. And then we're also talking about the market value when you go to sell that building. I think Paul's comment is correct that, you know, well, homeowners typically move out of their buildings within 5 years. And so to put a comprehensive package to pay up front for that is really hard for people. You know, if it's going to be $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 to really do an upgrade on a house properly, they're not going to do that.
Yeah, people don't expect to live in their houses, some people, forever.
Forever. And yet, if we can package the financing in a way that stays with the building and not that homeowner, then you have an opportunity to do it right and for those savings to stay with the building throughout the period of the building's life.
I'm interested in what you think as well, Mike Licata, and you too, Meredith Hatfield. This idea that Paul raised that if we're going to become more efficient, and he was skeptical about that 10 times more efficient, we should do it through the market. We shouldn't do it through telling builders what to do, adding to their costs. He also said, I was interested in this as well, Mike, the rebates, the incentives, they don't matter that much because there's not that many of them to begin with. What do you think? And Meredith, I want to hear from you too.
Yeah, I think Paul raised a number of really good points. The first of which is, what is the role of the government in providing and incenting action on energy efficiency? One of the I don't want to necessarily call it a hole in the study, but one of the sort of missing areas of the VEIC study that Meredith's office contracted for it, and they recognize it, is what's the level of private investment that's going on today? And they can't track that. And quite frankly, I ask around, and no one can get their hands around that. So when you say we can do 10 times more energy efficiency, well, it's hard to say that definitively, as Paul said, when you're not really sure how much is going on in the marketplace today outside of the government incentive programs, the core utility-managed energy efficiency programs. In terms of the value of the incentives, I think Paul raises a good point. You know, how much do those really have an impact? I hear from my members an awful lot. The BIA is very supportive of these energy efficiency programs managed by the utilities because we hear from our members that they like them. They appreciate them. If not so much even to the point of the financial incentives, but it's a partner that they can turn to. That's why we have always sort of looked to put more money into these programs when available, because, you know, the commercial or industrial building, the owner can call up the utility and say, hey, this is what I'm looking at doing. It's a partner that they can work with, helps to sort of debunk some myths or help guide them through the process. It's really a good sounding board for them. So that's why we've always been supportive of them. You know, will the incentives have a significant impact on changing behaviors? As, you know, Laura said, yes and no, it depends.
These are the government incentives now that you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes and no. And that goes back to, you know, my earlier point about, you know, the cost. What's the balance that we're trying to strike here?
You know, before I go to you, Meredith, I did want to ask you very quickly, Mike, about something that I have read a lot about just recently. In terms of the utilities, and now we're not talking about heating, we're talking about electricity, some have said that the incentives are all messed up, that the utility makes money when you, Paul, use a lot of electricity. So what incentive does the utility have when you, Paul, start shutting off your lights religiously? So people are saying the incentives are all messed up and they need to be changed.
No, it's a huge issue, and it's an issue that was cited in the report. Again, it's sort of they looked at it from this rate-making mechanism called decoupling usage from utility rates. But certainly, what incentive does a utility have to encourage a homeowner or a business to use less electricity if that's fewer sales for them? It's just one of the many, many, many questions that I would have around an energy efficiency resource standard going forward. Just another nut to tackle. We've seen mixed results in other states trying to wrap their arms around this issue. But no, it's a big problem. And certainly, I wouldn't speak for the utilities, but I'm sure, that would be number one on their checklist going forward. Because, as I said, my members like having a partner in the utility. It's someone they can trust, someone they can talk to. Well, the utility doesn't want to be losing sales and losing money. They have obligations to their shareholders as well.
Go ahead, Meredith.
Thank you. Just to be clear, the 10 times is looking at how much we're saving on electricity today and increasing that tenfold just through the utility programs. There certainly are a lot of other things going on out there, and we want to encourage those too. But the 10 times definitely is achievable. Other studies have shown that we can do much, much more. So actually the 10 times in this study is a little bit conservative. I do think the incentives are helpful. We hear from businesses.
This is the government incentives, the tax credits and so forth.
Right, ratepayer funded incentives. We hear from New Hampshire businesses who are looking to expand or maybe who are being wooed by other states to expand there. And they want to know what can the state help them with in terms of tackling kind of that upfront cost. So I think for New Hampshire to be competitive, we need to be able to offer those programs and to partner with businesses to help them reduce their costs. And in terms of the market, I think in a perfect world, we wouldn't need to have any programs that are ratepayer funded. The market would really take over. And I think that needs to be the long-term goal, is to grow the private market.
All right. After a short break, I've got a stack of emails here that I'd like to share with you. Also, lots of calls on the line. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We'll be back in a minute.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, where gun control efforts stand today, then the latest research behind the feast and famine approach to eating. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electric, now offering electrical repair and service in addition to furnaces, boilers, and water heaters. Online at justcallheritage.com. And Bedford Falls Assisted Living and Memory Care Community, offering creative cuisine, three meals a day, a theater room, pub and cafe style bistro. To schedule tours, visit bedfordfallsassistedliving.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today, we're looking at how New Hampshire stacks up in terms of energy efficiency, what more we could do. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And on our Facebook page, you can find a link to some of the reports and research that we're talking about today. Our guests are Meredith Hatfield, Director of the State's Office of Energy and Planning, Mike Licata with the Business Business and Industry Association, and Laura Richardson, Executive Director of the Jordan Institute. And all of you, right back to our listeners, and I've got a bunch of emails here that I'd like to share with you. This is from Jen in Newmarket. She says, I have been considering the energy-saving light bulbs for our home. However, the initial cost is relatively high, and their appearance is rather obnoxious. In addition, I have read a couple articles about their safety. Please advise if you have any information on this. And I'll throw that to you, I think, Laura Richardson.
Thank you. It's a great question because this is part of what happens with market transformation. You've got a new product. People aren't really sure what it is, what it looks like, what to expect from it. The costs are a little different. And so this is a normal challenge. That said, the new lighting products that are out there are overall much safer than existing lighting technologies. In that, I mean that the energy that's used for compact fluorescent light bulbs, for example, is a teeny fraction of what is used for the old school incandescent bulbs. And so the amount of energy that's generated to run the lighting it's a huge savings. So from a health perspective, there are toxins in some of this lighting, but if it's handled properly, it's not an issue.
Okay. Jen, thanks a lot for the email. And again, you can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. In Lexington, Natalie's waiting. Hi, Natalie. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi, everybody. A lot of great discussion going on. So I work for a regional group called Northeast Energy Efficiency Partnership, spend a bit of time in New Hampshire and in other states as well in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. And New Hampshire has a lot of terrific ingredients and a lot of people working hard to wring the most out of every energy dollar. But unfortunately, what it is missing, as was brought up earlier, is a policy framework so that it can tell the utilities, hey, guys, before you turn to new generation, we want you to meet as much energy demand as possible through energy efficiency because it typically costs about a third less than new supply to do so. And by not having a policy like that, you know, we think people in New Hampshire, businesses, homeowners are wasting too much on energy, are not being as productive as they could in their businesses. Too much energy is going on into fossil fuels when it could be invested in green jobs. So there's a lot of opportunity in New Hampshire, and we're working hard to hope that the state can ramp up in a smart and measured way to capture some of those opportunities for folks in the Granite State.
Well, Natalie, thanks for the call, and you're getting into some specifics that I wanted to get into, so thank you. So when you say a policy framework, Natalie, focused on the utilities, are you talking about new regulations? Are you talking about new laws? What are you talking about there?
Sure. Well, as Meredith mentioned, there have been three major studies done in New Hampshire in the last few years, and all of them have said what New Hampshire is missing is a policy, and we'll say a lot of this could happen through the regulatory way, through the Public Utilities Commission, but we believe that the legislature should pass a law that says the state should meet as much of its demand as possible through cost-effective energy efficiency before new generation. And that is something that about 30 states in the nation have something like this. Some folks call it an energy efficiency resource standard. They might have specific targets of what percentage of new electric demand, say, should be met through energy efficiency. New Hampshire has been hovering about 6% of its annual electric sales that are met through energy efficiency, which is not bad. As Mike Licata said, New Hampshire is about in the middle of the pack nationwide, but is unfortunately lagging the region, and that means that, you know, businesses that work in energy efficiency are having to cross the border to, you know, to get more business, where states like Vermont and Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island are all, you know, approaching 2% or more of their electric needs that are being met through efficiency.
Okay.
And this isn't just an added cost, to Mike Licata's point. It's about shifting resources to the most effective use. And it doesn't just benefit the folks who take advantage of the rebates. The idea is that it benefits everybody across the electric grid, the more we do in an energy efficiency, that drives down demand. And so we all save.
And drives down cost. Yeah. Natalie, thanks a lot. Lots of thoughts there. And let's get into this, folks. A policy framework. Meredith, your report does call for a new policy and regulatory push. I'm still a little unclear on, though, what you folks think this should look like. Maybe I'll turn to you first, Meredith. Is it focused on the utilities and saying you must do some of the things Natalie suggests? Is it focused on individual homeowners, individual businesses, home builders saying you must do X? I mean, where do you want this to get started in terms of saying you must? Or is it better to offer incentives saying you should and here's some cash to help you do that?
Well, the way we do it now is really a mixture. We do have a statutory framework that was developed back in the 90s that created the programs that we have now. And we do tend to focus on the regulated utilities because they're regulated and, you know, they're at the table at the PUC and we can work with them to develop these programs. But legislation could be as simple as, you know, as Natalie was saying, that the utilities should achieve all cost-effective efficiency as a first-order resource. And to me, it's really about changing the thinking because a lot of times people refer to efficiency funding as a subsidy. And when you buy a gallon of oil or a therm of gas or a kilowatt hour of electricity, you don't think about that as a subsidy. You think, I am buying energy. And I think we need to start thinking about efficiency that way. It is a resource and it should be a major part of our portfolio. And we really should be thinking of it as an investment.
So focus on the utilities and say, you must do this.
Yes. And the utilities have been a part of all of this work over the last several years, and they are very supportive. And as Mike was saying earlier, you know, they are fully at the table and are very good partners for both homeowners and businesses, and they want to do more. They have to close programs sometimes in the middle of a year and tell people, I'm sorry, we're out of funding. And they are doing creative things like looking at financing, partnering with banks to bring in funds other than ratepayer funding. But we do need to deal with the incentives, as Mike was saying. We need to tell utilities, you know, we want you to go for all efficiency that's cheaper than supply, and we will work with you so that it's worth your while.
What do you think, Mike? And I want to hear from you too, Laura.
Well, one of the issues that Natalie raises, the energy efficiency resource standard, there was actually a piece of legislation filed last year by Senator Martha Fluor Clark to get at this issue of requiring the utilities to first procure energy efficiency before actually going out and doing the kilowatts. And the Public Utilities Commission came in and testified and said, you know, this would have an annual cost of $100 million a year.
And why is that, Mike?
Well, if you look at it, you're spending money on energy efficiency. You are, you need to spend money. The utilities need to spend money to see these reductions by homeowners, by businesses, by industrial customers. So, you know, there's a cost associated with that. There's a cost associated with the programs that we have in place today. Ultimately, this isn't free money. This is money coming out of your pocket and my pocket and the pockets of our business owners. And we've seen time and time again, it's a really complicated issue. I mean, it looks great on paper. It looks simple. It says, okay, well, we spend $100 million and this is the savings that we achieve and this is the paybacks. But we've seen time and time again that we create these energy efficiency or sustainable energy funds in state government. And do they go to the projects that they should? Do they go to the projects that get the biggest bang for the buck? Do they get used for other purposes? Again, we've seen numerous times where
the regional greenhouse gas initiative.
Well, not just the
that fund has been raided.
The regional greenhouse gas initiative fund, the renewable portfolio standard fund, the core energy efficiency utility fund has been raided in the past. In 2010, the state government took $2 million and diverted that towards low income energy heating programs, which is who's going to argue against that? But it's not what these funds were intended to use, and it makes your sort of spreadsheets go all out of whack when the state government starts taking the money for other purposes. So again, we got to walk really slowly when we're looking at these issues. And I think we do a really good job of energy efficiency here in New Hampshire. I think that these programs that we have in place right now, we spend about close to $30 million on them. I think there's extensive monitoring and verification of those core efficiency programs. And I think that bears out in the facts. If you look at the Department of Energy, the U.S. Department of Energy, New Hampshire uses about seventh fewest amount of electricity per capita in the country. That's pretty good. I think we do a nice job with what we have. That's kind of the New Hampshire way of getting at problems is, you know, Yankee frugality. Let's spend the least amount and get the biggest bang we can. So, you know, it's good to, as Paul pointed out, the American Council for Energy Efficiency Economy, the ACEEE study that shows us sort of middle of the pack, and Natalie pointed that out as well. As Paul said, you know, that's looking at a number of specific policies that this group is advocating for, and whether or not New Hampshire's enacted those policies, I don't think we should use it as sort of the end-all be-all of how is New Hampshire doing on energy efficiency.
Here's an email that came in, and I'm going to throw this to you, Laura. This is from Kate. By the way, Natalie, thank you for that call. Kate says, thank you for the discussion about energy efficiency. New Hampshire should absolutely support cost-effective energy efficiency and look at regulatory policies like decoupling to remove hurdles to utilities' aggressive pursuit of efficiency. Other states in New England have done this with much success. We talked earlier about decoupling and what that means, changing the incentive for utilities. Kate says, we'd love to hear your guests discuss what has worked for other states in terms of putting policies in place to drive energy efficiency markets. And how can New Hampshire create a comprehensive energy efficiency plan for New Hampshire? Thank you, Kate, for the email. What about that last point? What has worked, Laura, for other states in order to help drive energy efficiency markets? I think that's a really interesting question.
It is a very interesting question. There have been a lot of studies done nationally, state by state, region by region, utility by utility. And I think the big takeaway is they do the study and then they follow up on it. And so in Massachusetts, they've got the Green Communities Act, which was based on a study, and that really empowered communities to step forward and start implementing energy efficiency and renewable energy projects across the board. You see a lot of work happening in Massachusetts. Yes, there is a lot of money going into those funds, but they are reaping the benefits of it significantly.
And when you say they, you mean?
They.
Individual homeowners,
business owners, the towns with their municipal buildings, they're seeing an impact. You know, when you do an upgrade to a municipal building, everyone benefits because you're paying tax money to support that program.
Go ahead, Meredith.
Well, Mike threw out some pretty big numbers, and they can sound kind of scary. But I think the thing we need to focus on is that cost-effective efficiency costs 3 cents a kilowatt hour, and to get electricity to my house is at least 15 cents. So when we talk about, you know, hundreds of millions, I mean, if we need to look at efficiency, as I said, as a fuel in the context of the even bigger number that it costs to bring electricity to all of our homes and businesses in New Hampshire, and not single it out, but really think about it in the bigger picture.
Let's see if we can take one more call. This is Reeve calling from Wolfboro. Hi, Reeve. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have two quick points I wanted to make. One is that I think you're only seeing the most important change you can make, which is working hard on people's attitudes. It's been learned that people don't really change their minds by having facts in front of them. They change them by discovering that other people are doing it. So if you were to put out a lot of articles and little news shows and even have contests on people making conservation improvements, which is the very cheapest thing they can do, I think that would be very effective. And the second thing I want to point out is it's really easy to lower your electric. My electric, and I actually debated whether to say this because it's a little embarrassing, is $12.75 a month, approximately.
Wow.
And the reason is that every time something broke, I just paused before replacing it and discovered, oh, I can live without this.
Be it the toaster or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, I haven't even changed out any of my light bulbs yet, except for one entry light. But I'm only using the single light bulb I'm sitting under. It okay. doesn't reduce my quality of living at all. And it makes me giggle when my electric bill comes in. I have a wood stove going.
Reeve, I'm going to let you go because we're running close to the end, but I love the image of you sitting under your one light bulb giggling at your electric bill. That's great. What do you think, Mike, about her point? Maybe we have time to hear from everybody on this. That, you know, people don't change their behavior based on putting facts in front of them. They change their behavior when they see other people doing it and it looks cool and maybe it's not so troublesome.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't want to touch too much on the residential community because that's not who I represent.
Sure.
I think, you know, the business community, we hopefully our members are making fact-based decisions. You know, they have obligations to their employees and their shareholders and themselves. So, you know, hopefully when they're investing in energy efficiency, and I really do want to point out, you know, I talk to my members all the time, and they have spent incredible amounts of money and time on energy efficiency programs. And so, you know, if you're a manufacturer in the Northeast and you aren't squeezing every cent you can out of energy efficiency, then you're not in business. And so when you look at a study like the one that came out and it talks about 10%, you know, commercial buildings, that looks like, you know, oh, that's a business. Well, schools are commercial buildings and other, you know, government offices are commercial buildings. And so, you know, it can be a little bit misleading. We say, oh, well, commercial and business and industry will get all this benefit from this. Well, a lot of businesses have already invested a lot of money on this. So we're talking about municipal buildings lumped in with that. So just something to keep in mind. But certainly, you know, if you see someone else who does something and they've gotten good results out of it, does that spur you to do something? Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think the report mentions public buildings. And you're right, Mike, there are a lot of leaky old schools. So go
ahead,
Meredith.
And the other thing is our utilities are experimenting right now with how do you create programs, very inexpensive programs that don't require a subsidy so that people will make some of these changes on their own.
Okay. Last word, Laura Richardson.
Yes, thank you. And our work at the Jordan Institute, we are looking to crack the nut on financing so that building owners can make these investments and it's not a painful choice.
Whether they be the individual or the school or the business.
And they can do it. They can do the project right.
All right. Well, all of you, thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate it. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The legislature reconvenes for the second half of its session, and on day one, the House approves Medicaid expansion. A polar vortex puts the Granite State under an icy grip. Manchester Mayor Ted Gatsis is inaugurated for a third term, and a Bedford coffee roaster creates a buzz by getting some national recognition. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from UR members and from Waste Management, producing enough energy to power more than 1 million homes every year. By 2020, they expect to double that output. Learn more at thinkgreen.com. And New Hampshire Business Review presenting the 2014 Bob Awards, honoring New Hampshire companies in over 80 business categories. Details at bobawardsnh.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org. Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. turn back the clock 1 year. As Congress reconvened for a new session, top on the agenda was gun control reform. With the president's calls for action, advocates for tighter gun restrictions thought this was the chance to get new laws on the books.